If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wall Street kicks off President Trump's second term with gains. And we like that. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring on Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital here in Chicago. Jack, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Thanks for the invitation, Andy.
Yes, so we are now post-inauguration, first day out of the gates, a pretty good one for stocks, a little less concern on some of those tariffs. Your takeaway as we start markets under a new administration?
Yeah, great first day. I think investors tended to focus on the pro-growth policies or the potential pro-growth policies, and we saw stocks pretty widely attract gains, both U.S. and international. But at the same time, maybe because of the delayed tariffs, interest rates slipped a little bit, and that was a nice fuel for a pretty broad rally.
You know, there's a lot of optimism going into the Trump administration. Markets had rallied months and months, from into the election. They'd call that the Trump trade and then continuation. Do you see that continuing, or has a lot of stuff been baked in and it's maybe even frothy?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, the market was a bit frothy even before the election, and, of course, the enthusiasm hasn't helped. Keep in mind that the U.S. large caps are a function of two things: earnings growth, which is expected to be strong, up mid-teens, but we're discounting those earnings at a very high multiple, and that's ultra-sensitive to interest rates. So when we saw interest rates rise from the September bottom to last week, it was roughly 1 percentage point increase. That's a challenge. Thankfully, rates have come back from there, but I do think that valuation is probably the biggest challenge that U.S. large caps face this year.
What areas of the market, Jack, do you think are poised to do the best here, as the new administration takes over? And a lot of times it's not always the usual suspects that most people think would do well under a particular type of leadership style.
That's an interesting point. Before I say that, let's put in perspective. If we compare Trump 1.0 election to inauguration, the market has moved almost in an identical pattern, with U.S. outperforming international, large cap outperforming small cap. We see interest rates rise, gold fall, dollar strong, and very similar to what we saw in 2016. The interesting thing, though, is from the inauguration day to roughly 1 year later, so November 2017, it was a completely different tack. Yes, U.S. did pretty well and large caps did well, but international stocks outperformed the U.S., and emerging market stocks fueled by China, which certainly was the punching bag between the election inauguration in 2016 and now, were actually up 42% that year. So that said, I think that the policy narrative that's overhanging the market now will likely dissipate, and investors will start to focus on more of the bigger picture, like valuation and interest rates and the like. So we think the market will broaden. We think that the average stock in the S&P will do a better job than the S&P itself. We think that small caps could outperform large caps. And depending on what happens with international, if the fundamentals straighten themselves out, they're poised to do pretty well as well. So I think that this is a year where the market actually broadens out.
What's the biggest threat to stocks right now?
In my view, the 10-year Treasury yield. I mean, from a financial point of view, keep in mind the 10-year Treasury yield is really that valuation metric that that helps determine what the multiple is. And right now, the market multiple is around 25 times. That's a, if you flip that over, that's a 4% earnings yield. And, you know, if you can go to a 10-year triple B bond and get 5.8, that's a pretty compelling alternative to owning equity. So if interest rates stay where they are or go higher, that could threaten the valuation of stocks.
And then for the income-oriented investors, there may be a shift here to yield, maybe away from growth. You were even talking about broadening. For dividend income-oriented investors, those that are maybe looking for more value, thoughts in that area?
Sure. So a lot depends on interest rates. But if interest rates stay where they are and regulations ease up, you know, real estate, at least broad real estate, could publicly traded real estate could do well. Master limited partnerships could continue to do well. They've certainly started off pretty strong. And even high quality dividend growth stocks could do well. But a lot of it does really hinge on interest rates. If interest rates go up, that's going to put pressure on equities in general because bonds can offer a better return than stocks. That's the challenge.
And then, you know, looking at equities overseas, foreign stocks, do you find any areas overseas that are really attractive right now?
Yeah, that one's hard because those markets are cheap, but they're fundamentally fraught. And so what we're going to need to see is how do those economies play out? China in particular is from a cyclical perspective, very cheap, but it has big challenges that they face. And so I think that for most of the markets are cheap for a reason. And if those reasons start to improve, perhaps that could be a catalyst for them to outperform.
And then are there any areas of the market you would completely stay away from right now?
That's a good one. No, because the thing is the expensive markets have positive momentum. Even Bitcoin is a strong momentum market. So right now it's not. I would say if we start to see momentum break down, I could see us certainly cutting our exposure into mega caps and Bitcoin and other crypto sectors. So that's probably an area that certainly expensive or stretched, but one where momentum is, as long as momentum stays in place, we'll continue riding.
Speaking of crypto, Jack, have your clients taken part of this crypto run? And just, you know, I know you're more of an older school investor. I wanted to get thoughts on that space. How is somebody like you handling crypto, especially if your clients are asking for it?
Sure. So there's really a great, what I'll call kind of a chicken way of getting into crypto. And that's largely because the option market is so bullish on that space. So, for example, it's called positive skew. What you can do is buy a Bitcoin ETF, so IBIT or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. This is my favorite trade.
Sell a call and buy a put and have, substantial upside and not that much downside.
You know, that ETF, by the way, pays a juicy dividend often, too. You got to keep an eye on that.
It's great. Yeah, it's a great yield while you hold it, too.
Yes, yes. And, you know, a little sidebar tactic. You know what I do with that dividend yield? I actually then go out and take the yield from that and go out and actually buy the coin, Bitcoin, and put it in wallets.
There you go.
Then that money stashed, I can have access to that anywhere in the world. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about crypto. I love that play. Just I might have stepped on you there. What's the vehicle that you use when you're doing that?
It would be IBIT, the exchange traded fund.
Yeah, and that's what I do as well. If you're a total straight up degen like me, and I've done this even throughout the day, I go and I double short it when I have the opportunity. We'll go in and then take that and throw it in the ETF. It's a really Bitcoin with the volatility now, super dangerous. And, but if you're a degen like me, it's a lot of fun. And you can kind of pick your spots in these real big extreme swings.
You can, and that's part of the reason why we like the low cost or zero cost collar, because it pretty much put the guardrails up around a pretty volatile asset class.
And then, as far as just our takeaway, new administration, things seem pretty bullish. What's your final takeaway from today's gains conversation?
Great. So let me just break it down. Valuation is stretched, but the fundamental economic backdrop is really, really powerful. Liquidity is strong. Investor psychology is still not overly bullish or overly bearish, and momentum is strong. So putting it all together says let's continue 2025 for the ride, but can keep an eye on interest rates and keep an eye on momentum.
Big thanks to Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital here in Chicago. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If that's an option for you, I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.